and welcome back to another edition of YCT Matters. This is Carol Platt Liebau, the president of Yankee Institute, and today we are delighted to be joined by a very special guest who is actually part of the Yankee Institute family, and that is Frank Ritchie, Yankee Institute's Labor Fellow. And as many of you know, Frank is a person not only of extensive knowledge, but of wide experience. He was the named plaintiff in a Supreme Court case, DeStefano versus Ritchie. He was the president of a New Haven Firefighters Union. And as Yankee Institute's Labor Fellow, he offers a wonderful program that really, in our opinion, every municipality or local leaders or any other leaders at the state level or going forward should be looking into. And it's called Labor and Management Strategies. And Labor Management Strategies is a way that Frank helps counsel and train people across the state so that they have a better understanding of labor's objectives when it is negotiating contracts and how municipal leaders or state leaders or those on the other side of the bargaining table can negotiate more effectively on behalf of taxpayers. We've gotten rave reviews about the program. I encourage everyone to check it out. And welcome, Frank.
Carol, thanks for having me on. It's an honor to be on your podcast.
Well, yes. Well, it is our Yankee Institute podcast, and we're thrilled to have you. So let's just get a little bit of housekeeping out of the way first thing. What is the website for Labor Management Strategies where people can reach out to you if they're interested in this kind of training?
Well, Carol, whether you're a member of the Board of Ed, a department head, or elected official, go to labormanagement.org. You can schedule a class, or you can always reach out to me on my cell phone.
All right, fabulous. So Frank, we have called you in here as our labor fellow and all-around labor expert to talk about a bill that is one of the last things to come out of the legislature at the end of the legislative session, which, as everyone knows, just recently ended. And that is a bill that would use taxpayer money to pay striking workers. Can you tell us a little bit about this bill?
Yeah, Carol, I think it's important that we understand the history of the bill as well, because what we really see here is a legislative sleight of hand. This bill was originally HB, it was a House bill, 5164, and the title of the bill was An Act Concerning Unemployment Benefits. So the bill's design was to give unemployment benefits to striking workers. So if there was a labor dispute and in private industry, and let's take Stop and Shop, for example, and the workers go on strike, they would be able to qualify after 14 days for unemployment benefits. But Yankee Institute for the last 2 years have raised the alarm along with strategic partners to say that this is really the height of absurdity. It also would affect the unemployment insurance of companies. So this would translate to higher costs for construction projects, food, all things that we need to make our economy grow. So what happened was, after Yankee raised these concerns, kind of near the stroke of midnight, they put forth a substitute House bill, and it was House Bill 5431. And the title of the bill had nothing to do with striking workers. It said an act establishing a stabilized support for ARPA replacement fund. And then when you looked into the meat of the bill, Carol, there was nothing about striking workers. The language was vague, ambiguous, and it talked about assisting low-income workers. So there was no transparency. This is really an affront to good governance.
It really is. And, you know, just so everyone understands, you know, this bill would actually use taxpayer money. Am I correct, Frank? Use taxpayer money to pay people to remain on strike.
Absolutely, Carol. So at close to that midnight hour, instead of it coming from the unemployment fund, which we didn't want, that was bad for business, bad for Connecticut, they now switched it to be a $3 million fund controlled by the controller, who would basically set all of the guidelines, but they hid it as a ruse for low-income workers without even explaining that it was going to support labor unrest.
So And so it's obviously flawed procedurally. And then substantively, there are a lot of problems with this bill as well, right, Frank? Because, I mean, it's not as though there is no provision made for striking workers. Isn't this part of what they pay dues for?
You would definitely think so. And most unions have strike funds. And that was something that was also flawed in the original legislation. First off, it's not a proper role of government to be supporting a strike. Number one.
No, because the whole thing underlying our government is supposed to remain neutral in disputes between its citizens. So if you have management on one hand and labor on the other, you know, government isn't supposed to be parachuting in and using taxpayer money to support one side of the strike, right? They're supposed to maintain neutrality, be a sort of arbiter if you need them to be.
Absolutely, Carol, you're 100% correct. And what we saw in this bill is even if it went under unemployment or with this controller fund, if they were on strike and receiving strike funds, there's potential for some workers to be making more money out on strike than they would be working. And to just highlight this, a Stop and Shop worker testified in 2022, and they talked about if this bill was passed, they would have more leverage. And to quote that testimony, had we had unemployment benefits to rely on during our 2019 strike, we might have been able to stay out of work longer. So they're relying on the taxpayers instead of relying on the union that they're paying dues to that should be supporting them in the strike fund.
And what you know, this bill would do is essentially draft taxpayers, whether or not they agree with the strike, really just takes taxpayer money and subsidizes a strike, whether you know you agree with it or not, whether it's a good idea or not, and really puts a thumb on the scale on the side of the unions.
Absolutely. And Carol, I've actually participated in two strikes. Even though I was a public sector worker, when Sikorsky went on strike for health benefits, I walked the picket line with Sikorsky and supported him. There's even an article in the Hartford Courant about it. When Stop and Shop went on strike, I was still the union president and I stood in solidarity with Stop and Shop workers. But I wouldn't have done either of those things if I knew it was being subsidized by the taxpayers. I knew that when I participated in those strikes, that workers and the company's management had to balance their interests. They had an incentive to get back to the bargaining table to negotiate in the best interest. What we see here is a union that wants to be subsidized by the taxpayer. And instead of having that mutual interest of wanting the company to succeed so they can succeed, it's essentially like the parasite trying to kill the host. And maybe that's strong language, but when you're subsidizing it with everyday taxpayers who don't benefit from these benefits, may not even choose to go to that company or that manufacturer, and now you're forcing them to pay for a strike, it absolutely just defies common sense.
Well, it really, really does. And, you know, part of the reason it seems to me that we have such a lack of balance with our government unions is the fact that they don't have to balance the interests of management or the taxpayer or whatever you might want to call the company. I mean, you know, government workers always, you know, the unions can always just go and demand another pay increase without having to worry that it's going to literally shut down the government and make the government go bankrupt and out of business. And one of the positive incentives, it seems to me, that helps maintain this balance in private industry is the fact that workers are incentivized to push for as much as they can get short of bankrupting the company where they have a job. And this really takes away, as you're saying, it really takes away that sort of mindfulness because they figure, what the heck? I've got government money behind me. I can just stay out forever.
Correct, especially if you're making more money on strike than you are working.
Why would you ever want to go back to work?
Right. We saw this in the pandemic when the government was giving away money that helped with inflation. So it also brings up another issue, Carol, that I think your listeners should kind of be in tune with. And that's this pernicious practice that's going on where unions, and this goes for public sector unions as well, is they're kind of abandoning the bargaining table, and they're relying on politics, political horse trading, to go to the state to advocate for legislation, things that are naturally done through the collective bargaining process. Because you have to remember, collective bargaining is supposed to be a naturally adversarial relationship.
Sure.
We want good labor management relationships, but the negotiating process is designed to be adversarial where you can balance those interests. But what the unions are doing now in Connecticut is they're circumventing that bargaining table and they're going to the legislature to try to get everything from higher teacher pay to pensions for cops and firefighters.
Right. Independent of whether it's a good idea, this isn't the way the process is supposed to work. And they're using, in a sense, their outsized political power, because they are really the state's most powerful special interest to work against really the interests of the citizens who are not being represented the same way that taxpayers or private enterprise is being represented at the bargaining table.
You are correct. And that's a big problem. Now, we're not talking about years ago, how it used to work is you would see the unions at the legislature advocating for things that weren't contained in the collective bargaining agreement per se. For example, broader workers' comp coverage, which is basically dictated by statute. That, I would say, is a proper role of the union. But this is far past that. They're actually trying to negotiate their contracts at the state capitol, where they represent to the politicians a special interest group that's going to knock on doors, that's going to phone bank and going to get out the vote for specific individuals. And that's not how our government was set up. It defies the proper role of government.
Well, and you know, it seems to me that you can't have it both ways. If they want everything set by statute, let's eliminate collective bargaining and really alert the taxpayers and, you know, start pushing back against this thing. I mean, I know that in South Carolina, for example, they don't really have unions, and conditions for work and a lot of other things are set by the legislature without the benefit of unions. If you're going to have unions, then they ought to be used properly, and you ought to have the things being collectively bargained that have traditionally been the topic of collective bargaining rather than a special interest trying to circumvent the process.
Correct. And talking about circumventing in the process, we do have an opportunity here. Governor Lamont has an opportunity to veto this bill. And the governor has indicated that he's inclined to do that. But it's important that our listeners of today's podcast goes to yankeeinstitute.org and hits that take action button to send an email or a text to the governor saying, veto this bill. Taxpayers should not be subsidizing striking workers.
Right. And that's exactly what this is. And the way it's easy to refer to it really is paying striking workers, correct?
Absolutely. And our listeners need to know that a phone call, while Yankees, your voice up at the Capitol, a phone call or an email to the governor's office helps amplify your voice. We work together. We're raising the alarm. We need our listeners to respond to that alarm now and just drop that simple email or text or phone call to the governor's office, because this has the potential to be stopped cold in its tracks.
And the thing is, you know, what's amazing is when we work together, we really can get the results we're after. I mean, this outreach has efficacy, but it's important that normal people, taxpayers, just regular people who are not part of a special interest make their voices heard, because certainly the unions as special interests are definitely making their voice heard, and this is all they have to do. And in a sense, that's what any special interest relies on, is that regular people are just out having a job, having a life, raising a family, trying to make everything work. And they don't generally focus with the same laser-like political intensity on public officials when it comes to a particular issue. But if we do our part, we can make sure that this doesn't happen. And one of the things that is so damaging about it, as you alluded to earlier, Frank, is it's going to really be inflationary. I mean, it has the results of raising costs for everything, because if the stores are, you know, stores or businesses or whatever have to pay higher costs as a result of longer strikes and everything, that's going to be reflected in what they have to charge us, correct?
Correct. And we're also looking at Connecticut. That's a small state. So if a company's looking to put a warehouse in Connecticut, it's not that hard for them to put that warehouse in Rhode Island or another
Massachusetts state. Or anywhere. I mean, we're a little state. It's easy to come right across the border. And anyone who is committed to making sure that we have plenty of good jobs that job creators want to locate here or want to stay here, you know, for all these reasons, I think it's really important people make their voices heard, right?
They have to make their voices heard. And this issue should transcend politics. It's not a partisan issue. And a perfect example is California's Governor Newsom vetoed a very similar bill that was paying striking workers out of the unemployment fund in 2023. So this really is a time to galvanize all individuals that are taxpayers to say, this is just a bridge too far.
If it's too far left for California and Gavin Newsom, it probably isn't right for Connecticut.
Well, we usually raise the alarm that, hey, wait a second, we don't want to be California, but this is the one time that we're going to
say, we actually do want to be California.
It's okay to follow their lead because
for this one time.
Yeah, this one time, we can all agree, Gavin Newsom is spot on with this one. And he recognizes, think about this, this is the governor of California. It's one of the largest economies in the world, the state economy itself. And even he recognized that, wait a second, this is going too far and is going to cripple business and is going to hurt actual workers in the end. And he vetoed the bill.
Yeah. And there will just be no words if we go to the left of California on this one, because we all know that the Golden State has just been absolutely ravaged by bad policy. And even this, even Gavin Newsom was like, oh, there, I don't think we can go this far. This is a really bad idea.
Absolutely. So, Carol, there's an opportunity. Go to that Take Action page, you know, talk to our external director, Bryce. He's up at the Capitol every day fighting for Connecticut's residents. We really need to stop this in its tracks. And Governor Lamont has the opportunity to do the right thing and ensure the proper role of government.
And so, well, Frank, thank you so much. And that is Frank Ritchie, Yankee Institute's labor fellow, talking to us a little bit about this bill that would give taxpayer money essentially to striking workers. And let's ask Governor Lamont to please stop that. Please veto that bill. And obviously, we always want to be polite. You can find the Take Action button on the Yankee Institute's website, yankeeinstitute.org. Wrong for Connecticut, wrong for our job creators, and really, in the end, a disservice to the union members themselves, because if jobs go away, you can't strike from a job you don't have. Frank, can't thank you enough for having been with us, and we thank you, our listeners, as always, for joining us. This is Carol Platt-Lebow. We look forward to having you with us for the next edition of YCT Matters.
I'll show you around this place.